Welcome to another episode of Commission Chats. I'm your host, John Scapini. Commission Chats is a podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the United States Sentencing Commission. Today is part three of our Problem Solving Courts miniseries, where we'll be joined by Judge Dolly G of the Central District of California, who spoke about her participation and experiences with the Conviction and Sentence Alternatives Program, or CASA. If you missed any of the other episodes in this miniseries, they're now available on both Spotify and iTunes. I'll now pass it over to my colleague, Lori Baker, who recently spoke with Judge G.
Good morning, Judge G. I want to thank you for spending some time with us today. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been on the bench, and how you became involved with problem-solving courts?
I have been on the bench in the Central District of California since 2010. I was nominated by President Obama in 2009, and I began working in the Los Angeles courthouse in January of 2010. So I've been on the bench for 14 years now. And it was probably about 2 years into my time on the bench that I was approached about becoming a judge for our Conviction and Sentence Alternatives Program, which is our version of Alternatives to Incarceration Program. And I had no experience whatsoever in criminal law before I became a judge. So I was a little bit hesitant about whether I would be the best fit for the program. But I came to learn that you really don't need to be an expert in criminal law to do problem-solving courts. You just really have to care. And I had always had some thoughts in my mind about the importance of trying to address issues in the criminal justice system that seem to be less than fair or less than efficient. And I thought that CASA, as we call it, was sort of a perfect fit for me in terms of trying to put into practice some of the thoughts that I had about criminal justice. And I don't know if you recall, but probably in the 2011-2012 timeframe, there was a great deal of conversation on both sides of the aisle about the problem of mass incarceration and whether you came at it from a point of view that it was overly expensive and inefficient, or from the viewpoint that it's a moral imperative to not warehouse people more than they need to be. I think there was somewhat of a consensus that there needed to be alternatives to incarceration. And so I think Eric Holder was the attorney general at the time. He had some priorities, including an effort to promote alternative to our incarceration programs. And we were lucky enough to have Andre Barat, who was a district judge. The U.S. attorney in our district at that time. And he very enthusiastically embraced the concept of CASA. And so he and our pretrial services office and our federal public defender's office and the courts became a very wonderful collaborative in trying to put together the CASA program.
So tell us a little bit about the program. How does it operate? Who's involved?
Well, we have a large district. We have a Los Angeles courthouse. We have a Santa Ana courthouse, and we have a Riverside courthouse. So each of these courthouses has its own separate CASA program. Mm-hmm. The Los Angeles courthouse has two judges that oversee CASA participants. I am one of them, and Andre Barat, who was the U.S. attorney in our district and now is a district judge, is the other. And then in Santa Ana, we have Fred Slaughter, and in Riverside, we have Jesus Bernal. And we also have some wonderful magistrate judges who also participate on our team. So each location has a CASA team, and the team is comprised of representatives from the court, from the U.S. Attorney's Office, from the Federal Public Defender's Office, and from pretrial services.
Does the does the CASA program, is it designed for a certain type of population?
That is the unique thing about our CASA program. Unlike many problem-solving courts, we are not a drug court, we are not a mental health court, we're not a veterans court, we are all of the above. We deal with any external factor such as drug abuse, mental health, negative peer influences, gambling addiction, any type of external influence that has contributed to a person's criminality.
So you must have a tremendous number of resources in order to deal with all of those diverse issues.
We have our pretrial services office resource, and all of the people who I mentioned who are part of our CASA team in each of the courthouses volunteers their time. So I say this because I like to always encourage smaller districts to not be deterred from starting programs of this kind, because we started the program with simply existing resources. We did not have any special grant or inflow of funds. It was just people who wanted to do the program, who volunteered their time in addition to the things they were already doing. And then we had the resources of our pretrial services office, which, if they were not applied to these CASA participants, would be applied in some other way to other pretrial services.
Right. What about community partnerships?
Over the course of the past 12 years or so, we have developed some community partnerships. They include, for example, for some period of time, we had a partnership with a nonprofit called LA Kitchen, which had jobs available to, or trained people to take jobs in the culinary field, where they tried to train people to be chefs or to work in restaurants and whatnot. Unfortunately, that nonprofit went away, but we also work with others. We have a partnership with the LA Public Library. They provide resources to our participants. We're always trying to establish relationships with other entities that can provide resources to our participants.
Tell me about some of your program successes and how you measure those successes.
Well, that is an interesting question, because that is always an issue as to how do you measure success. And we have been trying to retain some people from local universities to do a study on our program. The FJC has also at times looked at our program. The difficulty is trying to find data, a control group to compare our participants with those who are not participating in our program. I think that the only thing I can tell you at this time is anecdotal, which is that we have an 89% graduation rate. We do not do social promotion, so we don't graduate people unless we feel that they are in fact ready to take on the world, so to speak. And we have had some really amazing graduates of our program, including one who became a lawyer, another Wow. who has gone to law school and is or aspires to become a lawyer. We have some who have gone to obtain higher education in hopes of doing more for themselves and their families. And so there are just countless people whose lives have changed because of the program. And I can tell you that it is very gratifying to see the people who come in, and sometimes the hot mess that they are when they do come in, and how they've progressed over the year or 2 years that they're with us to become a completely changed, different person. And the effect is not just on the person themselves, but also the ripple effect on their families and on society.
Right. So you mentioned a year or 2 years. I was going to ask you, what is the typical duration of the program? Or does it depend on when individuals have met their goals?
Ideally, it is a 1-year intensive supervision program. And if people have met the goals of the program within that year, we have a graduation twice a year, and they are graduated from the program, and they are either going to have their felony dismissed or they will have a probationary sentence with no incarceration. Sometimes there are what we call our senior members who have a little difficulty completing or meeting the goals that we set within the 1 year time frame. And for those, they stay on for longer until we feel that they are ready to graduate.
What have you enjoyed most about your involvement with the program?
My greatest enjoyment is what I mentioned to you before, which is how inspirational it is to see people who come in with numerous problems and who have all sorts of either drug abuse or mental health issues, often both. And if they commit themselves to the program and make the best of the resources that we provide to them, the amazing transformation of these people is a wonderful sight to behold. And that, I think, is the only thing that I need to continue being in this program. And I'm going on 12 years now, so I obviously have not tired of it.
Right.
It is a great boost to be able to see people transform themselves in that way.
What do you think some of the challenges are that you face in running this program?
I think that one of the challenges is to have all of our team members be up to speed on evidence-based practices and to obtain the training that we need to be able to address some of the sometimes serious mental health issues or recurring relapses in drug abuse that our participants face. Another problem that we often deal with is housing insecurity and how to be able to help our participants in the best way possible to find housing for themselves and their families. Those are some of the primary problems I would identify.
And what advice would you give to someone who wanted to start a program in their district?
Just do it. I am a great proponent of these types of programs and have spoken with people in various districts, and many times those who want to start programs have come to our district to observe our program. And it really has to do just with wanting to do it. And also obviously having the stakeholders that I mentioned, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Federal PD, the Pretrial Services Office, and the courts all working in tandem to want to put a program like this together. And I have to say that our stakeholders have been amazing in their ability to work together to promote this program and to make it one of the premier ATI programs in the country.
You say you have visitors come to see your program. I assume you encourage people to get out and look at other courts that are in existence and developing their own?
Yes, and we're always willing to share any resources that we have. There's no sense in reinventing the wheel. So we have, for example, an interagency agreement between our various stakeholders regarding how we're going to run the program. We have lots of templates for orders and the logistics of getting a program like this running. And we're always happy to have people come and observe our program and see how it works. And sometimes people will put some different spins to their own programs based on the needs of their respective districts.
Right.
And so it's sort of a cross-pollinization of ideas.
Sure. Was there anything else that you want to tell us about your program or your experiences or any other advice you would have for our listeners?
I would just say that, as I mentioned, it is not that difficult to start a program if all the stakeholders are willing. And it doesn't cost a lot of money because we use existing resources. What we do have, which has been an important supplement to our existing resources, is we have an attorney admissions fund at our court, which has, on an annual basis, provided us with a grant that we apply for. It typically has not been a large amount. We've typically asked for between $12,000 and $15,000 a year, just so that we can fund graduations and receptions for graduations, and sometimes provide some needed transportation costs for participants who need public transportation, things of that type. So I encourage all of your listeners to consider putting on a program like this if they don't have one. And we always welcome their visit to our district if they wish to see ours in action.
Wonderful. Well, we thank you very much for sharing your time and your experiences with us today. And we wish you luck with your future endeavors.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Commission Chats. Stay tuned for more episodes in our Problem Solving Courts miniseries. For more information on Problem Solving Courts, visit our website, ussc.gov, and hover over the Education tab to access all of our Problem Solving Courts resources. Commission Chats is now available on Spotify and iTunes, so be sure to follow along with us there. If you'd like to receive the latest news from the Commission, you can find us on LinkedIn, or we are at the USSC.gov on X. That's all for now. I'm John Scapini, and thanks for listening to Commission Chats.